Thank you to Babbel for sponsoring this video.
Aaron, you ready to get this show on the road?
I am so ready, oh my God.
That's what I love to hear, brother. I get afraid to theorize too much because I know a lot of people here who watch the show have also read the comics, and we're intentionally not reading the comics.
Nope.
Because who wants to make the effort? No, it just makes, it makes for more. Sometimes it makes for a more enjoyable time when you have, it's so unexpected. You just never know what direction shit's going to go. And I see the reflection sometimes in the comments with certain top comments of like, oh man, if you think it's crazy now, wait till you get to this part. And I'm like, I don't want to read anymore.
Like, nope,
I don't
want
to read anymore.
Nope.
Yeah. So I'll try not to open up too many multiverse doors there to possible things that people talk about.
I see what you did there.
But I would like to, I really love this season a lot. I prefer this season over the first one.
Really?
I do. I know Aaron's on a big kick right now with season one because he did a rewatch and he's all proud of himself.
Season one is great. Season one's fantastic.
I know it is. I think this one definitely ends more where it doesn't feel completed. However, like season one still ends in a way where obviously there's more story to tell and it's not complete. But season one feels like it's done, but you still need a sequel. This feels like it's part of a chapter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I really like this chapter a lot. I just vibe with this one so much. So with everything that it had a consistent theme throughout of identity and existentialism that we keep bringing up. And I think the way they did the narrative through line was very effective, I would say.
Yeah.
Like, especially with the Armstrong character, I was surprised by how...
Engstrom?
Armstrong. Engstrom. Engstrom, yeah. Whatever. I'm sure I said it wrong many times. Hey, man, I did all right. I told the patrons. My stomach's been, like, really hurting all day. And I was like, I'm not going to tell people on YouTube. But because if I didn't bring it to touch on YouTube during this, then I didn't want people, like, misreading anything if I seemed off. But anyway, what was I saying, Aaron? Now I'm losing my train of thought. Engstrom. I had to really justify why I got his name wrong. I had to really explain it. And
you're gonna get mad.
I don't want to look like a fool.
Oh, you're talking about how you like the themes of this season.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, like and sometimes multiversal ideas that just presenting that often can open up the door for where's it going to go? We're going to see like a bunch of different fun dimensions. Like what direction is really going to go down? Sometimes it just feels like a hack job of, hey, look, fun alternate version. Or does it actually do something to the character's identity? Does it actually factor in some way? And while we didn't do this whole thing of exploring, like we didn't have episodes or significant runtime, I would say, dedicated to going through the multiverses, maybe down the road we will. But this season we didn't. I still loved how Engstrom's character served a bigger purpose for what it challenges for Mark to form his identity. You know, like his time here, his presence on the show, it's one of those characters where screen time might not be a lot, but the impact of his character is going to be long lasting because of what it did to Mark. And especially at the challenge of, in every universe, essentially, Mark is a bad dude. Mark is Omni-Man's son. You know, he is truly like the evil Viltrumite. And he's got this standard to himself of not killing. And it seems like in any context, even though he has killed before, right?
I don't think so, no.
Really? He's never killed? So part of my brain was going, I thought he killed before, but I guess this was the first time they truly made a moment out of it.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely
never killed anybody before.
He's really injured people. And maybe aliens. Maybe not a human.
A human. That's what I was thinking. I don't think he's ever killed a human.
Yeah. Like he's definitely injured people for sure. Like majorly. Like I think of like those aliens that age really quickly in the first season.
Yeah. He's killed. I believe nothing really comes to mind because it's never, I don't recall any like significant, but for a human being, he's never killed. And And it's really easy to be in the audience seat and go, well, dude, I mean, he had your family hostage. He broke your mom's wrists. Of course you're going to, he was pushing you. He wanted to bring the killer out of you. And in a lot of ways, that's his ultimate version of winning, is bringing out the killer in you. It's almost akin to, like, if Joker got Batman to kill him, Joker would have won.
Yeah.
You know, even though it's not as much of a maniacal glee that Angstrom is taking in that form, it's still kind of a big part of the purpose of the fight. But when you are in the driver's seat of doing the action and killing it, it's a very big difference. But especially when he had an opportunity to stop, you know, it's the fact that he didn't stop and he decided to execute without thinking. But he was like stranded forever and lost through time and put into all kinds of battles. He was being tortured for something that wasn't his fault, you know. So I like to, of course, in an audience, I'm like, "Don't do it! Come on, it makes sense that you would do that." Yeah, there's like so many reasons why. Whereas what Omni-Man did in season one was just in the name of conquest.
Yeah,
very different thing.
The name of duty.
Yeah. So I just really love, and I love how weird this got. This season got so bizarre.
Yeah.
in ways that I thought they never real, like, my one nitpick is maybe the comedy beat of the mummy rising and being like, wait a minute, you're female, like breaking character to sound modern and be like, wait a minute, you're female. It's like, I thought the one part that maybe could have handled been a little bit more witty in some way. But other than that 2 seconds, I really loved this season a lot. Could use more Omni-Man. Would have helped boost the views.
Omni-Man would have been great. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say I really, really enjoyed the season. I think overall I still prefer season one. Main reason being that I felt like there were so many things that they were setting up, whether it be Martian Man or the predecessor to him. What do you remember his name? The Shapeshifter.
No, dude, I've been calling him Armstrong.
No, I meant the Shapeshifter. Like,
no, my point is, why would I remember the Shapeshifter's name? I call him Armstrong. I remember as Anissa, and that's because she's the hot village for mine.
The hots for her.
I don't remember that name.
The cheekbones, though. But yeah, I think that, you know, between the stuff with Immortal, between the stuff with Monster Girl and Rudy / Robot, the Omni-Man stuff, there was a lot more plot that was spread out. So, like, Mark is obviously the title character, so there's this sense of priority over him, of course. But, like, there are some episodes where we don't get Adam Eve, and not to say that we need all these characters in every scenario. I think the show has done a great job of cultivating an interesting cast of characters to, like, it's almost its detriment to the fact that we want to see more from them, but we don't get to in this period of time. And then, not to mention, because of production problems or whatever, they're spreading across this show's release. You know, the first half released in November, the second half released in March, and I want to invest in these characters. I want to see them, but I'm not getting as much of them as I would like to. But as for the characters I am getting a lot of, I'm really enjoying those things. I'm really enjoying seeing Mark's journey and where he's been from the start of the season, through the beginning of the first season, through where he is now, and how the arc that he goes through in this season is almost like the inverse of what he went through in the first season, where his entire driving force in the first season was the fact that he wanted to be like his dad. He wanted to be this great hero that can save everybody, that can fight all the biggest, baddest villains out there, because he cares about the little guy, and his dad views them as lesser, at least at the time. And now, since the finale, his entire arc is, I don't want to be my dad. And even though we did it Angstrom Levy from the beginning point, I really enjoyed the subversion of what that character was. Even though he wasn't too prevalent in the series, and he was like the big bad of the season, but I don't even know if I could quantify him as that, because he doesn't have an effect on anything else in the season outside of what it does for Mark's arc. And, like, we see him go to other worlds and, like, see other Marks and, like, see the alternate version of Cecil and Donald, which we don't really get much of in this finale. And I think they touch them a little bit, like, throughout the show. But anyway, I think the seeing what he does in the finale really is less about how he affects the universe at large, but more so how Mark's Achilles heel is triggered. Like something really prominent in season one and is the fact that Mark has this major anger underlying when he's in points of stress or great tension. And like it makes me think of the episode with Titan or the episode with the alien that they age really slowly. Like when he is activated, he kind of loses a little bit. And that form of uncontrollable rage is the part of himself that he fears the most. And that is confirmed when he is pushed to the point of killing Angstrom Levy, which I liked that point. I liked where the last episode ended into this episode because it feels like a comic book cliffhanger, like for a flip through issue. But seeing that this whole first half of the episode is just that entire interaction and like the frustrating process he has to go through in order to try to save his family until he ultimately kills the villain, only adds to that choice or that reaction that he has in that moment. And I like that the rest of that episode is just him by himself trying to process what he did. I could easily see how this plays out in panels, like the dialogue bubbles of him trying to like rectify or rationalize why he did what he did. And I like that we don't see in a lot of other comic book media characters getting to process their emotions and feelings like that, because I think that's the stuff that really endears us to characters, is those moments of reflection, is the guilt, is all the emotions that come in between those feelings from the highs to the lows. And watching that all just made me really appreciate the show a lot. And I think I've stayed with that appreciation for the entire time if we've been watching the show. But something that I did like towards the end of that whole period is when the guardians from the future come and see Mark. And then Adam Eve tells Mark that she has feelings for him. And I love that moment because it's been 20 years for her. And it's like the regret of the things she didn't say. That's something that she's been ruminating on for years and years just to get to this moment for Mark. But in Mark's perspective, he just broke up with Amber that day. And he probably has inklings of feelings for Adam Eve that he had before he was with Amber. But obviously, since he got into a relationship with him, that was the primary focus. But now that's a seed that's planted deeper in his brain because she had to get her personal opinions and thoughts out to get that chance of redemption for herself to tell Mark. So that moment was more about her and her relationship with her regrets than it was about Mark. But that's going to play a big part in where Mark goes in the future with his relationship with the present day Adam Eve. So I think that was a very cool kind of way that they did that, because who knows how long it would have taken had she not intervened in that moment to tell Mark how she felt. This episode had a lot of really good stuff, and I like seeing Omni-Man kind of finally verbalize how the actions at the end of season one made him feel and his guilt about that. I liked seeing the moment between Robot and Monster Girl. I also like seeing, just going back to them saving Mark in the desert, Monster Girl was in her monster form. She was not the little girl. And I want to say, I have a theory that's because Robot couldn't stop it. Rudy couldn't stop it. So she's cursed to stay in that form, because if she doesn't stay in that form, she's going to be a baby, which I think would be like a really cool, tragic kind of fate for that character. But I definitely enjoyed it overall. Like I kind of agree with Greg, the fact that the first season felt like this contained the story that was open to larger things happening, like teasing for the future. But this definitely feels like a chapter into something larger to come, even though the Angstrom Levy stuff didn't feel, that felt contained within the season or the arc within this season of him trying to not feel like his dad, to kind of confirming that with his actions, that he does have similarities to his father. And I'm look forward to see, now that he has gone to that point, where his character goes from this point on. I like seeing that there is this thing where we see what justice means to different characters. You know, what justice means to Cecil, what justice means to Mark, what Omni-Man feels is justice. He feels death for the things that he's caused is justice for him. Cecil feels like killing the bad guys is justice for the world. And just where everything comes up, what is justice to Mark now that he's crossed that line? I'm very curious to see what that comes of in the future. I think I got most of them for now. My thoughts. I said a lot of things.
That was 11 minutes.
Of me just talking?
Yeah.
Damn, son. Let's go. Let's go monologues. Let's go yeah. Thoughts. Videos, baby.
Sure. It's a conversation, Aaron.
It is a conversation. Do you have anything to add to what I said?
I believe this happened last episode.
This did. Yeah, like you said your thing. I said my thing. But yeah, do you think that...
Next time I'll say everything.
Okay.
And then I'll give you... I'll just talk for 12 minutes.
Oh my God.
Just to top you. And I'll be like, here you go, Aaron. Add on.
I don't know. Do you agree or disagree with anything that I said?
Like, I don't know. I zoned out after a while. Who can listen to someone talk straight for 11 straight minutes?
That's what YouTube videos are.
I know. When there's like two people on camera, I feel like you got to have like a little bit more of a back and forth, you know? That's why sometimes I was like talking to you a little bit when I was doing my thing. You know, like turn my attention to you to include you in the conversation. But, you know, not everyone's a professional like me.
I looked at you. I was like, hey, Greg, what's up?
Did you?
Looking at me. You didn't see me. You're looking at the ground, so you didn't see me talk to you.
Listening. I was trying to fall asleep.
You know what I say?
It's 11 minutes. 11 minutes of something. Points. Something about season one.
I did talk about season one.
Being good.
Yes. But, okay. So, something I do want to address, because I didn't say it fully. Now I'm talking to you.
Hello there, esteemed viewer of The Real Rejects. I, Greg Alba, language connoisseur and worldly gentleman, am here to bestow upon you the secrets of Babbel. Babbel is an engaging language learning app designed for real-life conversations, offering quick 10-minute lessons tailored by linguistic experts to effectively teach you a new language. Its conversation-based approach, enhanced with speech recognition technology, makes Babbel worth trying for anyone looking to learn at their own pace, anytime, anywhere. My dear friends, in this age of monolingual mundanity. Babbel is our beacon of hope, crafted by an army of over 150 language experts. Their lessons are like linguistic caviar, rich, refined, and oh so satisfying. Personal tale of triumph. I once whispered sweet nothings in Spanish, or for the layman, Espanol, to my wife, courtesy of Babbel. Her reaction, well, I'll tell you, she was utterly bewitched. Greg, you silver-tongued devil. No paraphrase. She exclaimed such vocabulary as I bask in the glory of my perfect pronunciation. Because Babbel isn't just about learning words. It's about embracing the art of conversation with podcasts, live classes, and a veritable smorgasbord of interactive lessons. I know the words I'm saying. And their speech recognition? It's like having a personal language butler, ensuring every syllable is impeccably crisp. Now brace yourselves for an offer of monumental proportions. Here's a special limited time deal for our viewers and listeners to get you started right now. Get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but again, only for our viewers, at babbel.com/rejects. 55% off at babbel.com/rejects. Spelled babbel.com/rejects.
Rules and restrictions may apply.
Join me, the Greg Alba, in the adventure of language mastery at Babbel. We shall not just learn no, nay, we shall conquer the world of communication. Or as they say in Spanish, comunicación.
We're done with this ad.
The part where it was the...
Now I'm talking to you.
Now I'm saying words.
Now I'm talking to you. Hey, you look at me when I'm talking to you.
You're talking to me?
I'm talking to you. Look at me.
Look at me, baby. I was going to say, I like the joke. Did you like the joke of them going to the tomb? And what I was referencing is that when Omni-Man was training Mark in season one, it's the cold opening is this guy going into this tomb, opening it, and that mummy comes out. And right as the mummy's about to leave the door, them flying over the desert closes the door shut, and we never go back to it again.
Yeah.
So it was just a reprisal of that joke.
Yeah, I think they reward their audience with paying attention to stuff. Yeah, it was nice. It's fine. It's fun.
It was fun.
It was fun. I like the cold open of this a lot. I think that some of the reasons why you might prefer season one over season two, or the exact reasons why I kind of prefer season two, is maybe it's sure that I think I can totally see how one can find this one to not be as cohesive or focused. I think what this season did for me, I remember season one was kind of coming off in the zeitgeist of when like The Boys was also coming out, mm-hmm. and two of those shows that this show, season one of Invincible and early, I don't know if it was season one or two, but early era of Boys were both seen as like, oh, these adult comic book shows that have a similar thing of where you introduce a la Justice League, mm-hmm. and then you pull back the curtain and go, leader of Justice League is bad. know? And this is violent, and now we're going to deconstruct what this is. And I think especially Invincible did that in season one. You know, its first episode just kind of feels like a DC animated movie.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it's this ultra-violent hard R at the very end, and that's kind of the point of it is you would introducing this world. And I only really cared vehemently about like two people in season one. It was like obviously Mark and Omni-Man and then sort of the other people. I liked everyone. This season got me super invested in a plethora of our characters who have come back. I thought they drastically, even though Rex wasn't in this episode, Rex got me so hooked into him. And I love the evolution there. I love how everyone was dealing with consequences here of their evolutions, consequences of their choices, showing that post-growth that there will be true growing pains. Like Rex, as much as he, and not Rex, Robot.
Rudy?
Yeah, Rudy. As much as Rudy evolved from season one, he's so learning to be human. He's seen the consequences of that, of just learning how to be a basic human, you know, learn how to be a basic bitch. Learned how to be a basic human of just communication, you know, and immortal, confronting mortality via this. Again, in tune with identity. Adam Eve with this limitless skills of power. Right now, with season one, they had to just sell the audience so much on what that show, this world is. Mm-hmm. And now they're building up for something much bigger. Because before season two came out, they did Adam Eve.
Right.
Which was an entire special just dedicated to her to show she's like so crazy powerful and she doesn't even know it. Like she is so insanely powerful. And as they're traveling the multiverse and stuff, I think that what they want to do right now is they know they have a long period of time where they can kick it. They know that they can take these long breaks between the half of a season. And people will still come in and people will still tune in because that fan base is there waiting for it. And I think they've taken that to their advantage. Like what they've done with Debbie in this season, I was so worried they were going to kill her off. Yeah. Like when they got to this episode, when her life is in danger, I started just playing the rest of the season back in my head of the grief she was going through and going, wait, were they giving us so much Debbie focus because they were going to kill her off? No. Like my mind started churning because of that. Yep. There was so many surprises. Maybe not for comic book readers, but for like Omni-Man showing up and like, holy shit, he's had a change of heart. Like, what is going on here? You know, I thought this season was while they left a lot that was, and I expected, like before we started filming the reaction, I think I said something in the intro of like, looking forward to seeing all the things that are just going to be not resolved till next season because you kind of just feel that. But yeah. I'd much rather have that than a show that feels this need to wrap everything up by the end of season two or put a like nice bow tie on it because I think that with the exploration, that's what I mean. I think it's the exploration that I've so been into. Just like the I think the show is more mature than last season. So while there's not the wow surprise fresh factor of season one, this season has been Donald. Who gave a shit about Donald in the first right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. he's just like Cecil's number two. He's some random guy. Sure, it's sad when he died, but then you're like, whoa, this is whole story about existentialism with artificial. It's like, what is life when you are this? You know, I was so surprised by it. I dug this a lot, and it feels very malevolent and somber, and I think it knows how to toy with, like, the last season I think ended in a very simple way of, all right, Omni-Man left, Alan. It's kind of cool how both seasons end with Alan and Alan and Mark, now Alan and Omni-Man. And yeah. It's like Alan's always the hope. Alan's the hope. Maybe he's the secret hero. I don't know. But what I really love is, I lost my train of thought here. I lost my juice.
got the juice. That Alan and Omni-Man are like kind of like a reversal of the last season, because it's like Omni-Man and Alan versus Mark and Alan in the last one. That's what you were saying.
Oh, yeah. Okay. The way how the season one ended was, all right, Mark, they got to prepare for Voltramite War. Cool. Let's go, humans. What are you going to do to prepare? There's other people in the galaxy. So it just seemed like it might just be some big recruiting session. And this didn't go all the direction of how most comic book properties would go. Yeah. And this season, because of the amount they set up with, we just keep calling him Optimus Prime, Tatius, with Tatius being a Viltrumite, with Alan and Omni-Man here, and the amount of other things they set up but didn't really resolve, you're like, I have no idea where it's going to go. I love that. I love being in like just great unknown terrain while knowing that this show is going to still breathe and take its time to keep it grounded in its characters' emotions throughout. This is my favorite. This has to be my favorite comic book show right now, airing currently, maybe. I don't know. Sometimes I watch like one of the other ones and I'm like, oh no, it's this one, you know. But this might be my favorite one. I think it is.
I think it's my favorite superhero show for sure. I think it captures that very well. What it means to be a hero, what it means to have justice, what it means to do right by the people in your life and by the world.
But I really like She-Hulk Attorney at Law.
The best one, clearly. Everybody's favorite.
Yeah.
Yep. Every single episode. Even the wedding one. Everybody loves it.
The wedding one. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Also, we didn't talk about Spider-Man, dude. That was dope. That was so cool. What the fuck? Josh Keaton came back?
My mom was like, they can't be Spider-Man. I just didn't like believe even that the thwipping was happening. Like, no way they would do that.
They didn't name him.
Yeah, but it's very obvious that the idea was to do that. But there must be some right... That's an Amazon. Aren't they producing like some Spider-Man show?
Yeah, they're doing Silk and they're doing the Spider-Man Noir.
Was it Spider-Man?
It was Josh Keaton voicing him. I know that voice anywhere. I've seen Spectacular Spider-Man so many times. My favorite Spider-Man show. I'm like, I know that voice. Plus, I think I did hear that he was voicing some character in the show. And as soon as he started talking, I'm like, yep, that's Keaton.
Let's look up what he looked like in Invincible comic.
Also, a little fun fact. He also voiced... Spider-Man-like character in Young Justice.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think he was a villain, though. It's like Black Spider or something like that. He has to correct me.
Okay, so he definitely just looked like regular Spider-Man in the comics.
Yeah.
Okay. What was that? What was the suit? Spider-Man. It was like an A symbol, right?
Yeah. Like Arachnid Kid or something like that. I feel like this is something they just made up for the show.
Yeah, it must be something they made up for the show. I'm trying to think if they like pulled an actual Spider-Man into here, because they do that. I mean, they straight up had, I guess they must have like a legal copyright team that looks in and goes, what can we say? Like with the Batman joke, mm-hmm. to go, your man just like a bat and you call yourself that kind of lazy, but like, we just can't show him and we can't call him Batman.
All right. They just showed the rippled cape in the corner of him being in a dark city. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I don't know. I like that that they did that. I thought that was very cool that we got to see a little glimpse of that. I would like to see that character come back more.
But he was straight up just Spider-Man.
He was holy Spider-Man.
Just whipping and everything.
He had the webs on him. He had the goggles.
Just Spider-Man. Yeah. And Robert Kirkman recently was saying, like, don't expect a Spider-Man cameo. That's not me teasing something. Like, don't expect it. And maybe I fell for that. But
technically wasn't Spider-Man.
But it's so Spider. It's
very
like
much Spider-Man
would be suing me for being doing everything but changing the letter, getting Josh Keaton.
Change the letter that he has goggles. He has like some webbings. I liked his suit. I thought the suit was really cool. They didn't name him.
Can you imagine they get actual Spider-Man there?
Oh, that'd be so cool. I would have lost my shit if it was actually Spider-Man.
Oh yeah, man. I give this a 10 out of 10 just because of Anissa.
That's great. She wasn't even in this one.
Well, the season as a whole, I mean, it's the best season ever.
If I give season 1 10 out of 10, I'll say this was a 9 out of 10.
And let's take a bite out of that Viltrumite. You know what I'm saying?
Viltrumite booty.
Yeah, that rhymed.
Yep, 100%.
Viltra booty.
Viltrass.
People are like, quit sexualizing her. She's a cartoon played by a 50-year-old woman.
Was she really?
I have no idea. I'd rather not look it up.
Nope. That's knowledge we don't need.
I like to imagine the real life of Anissa. She looks exactly like her Viltrumite character. Animated and all.
She lives in my dreams. She's my muscle mommy.
I joined the Viltrum Empire 4, plain and simple.
Yeah, you want her to squash in your head like she did Mark at the end, huh?
Yeah.
You like squish me.
Well, she wouldn't do that because I'd be listening to orders.
Right. We'd be her little pet.
Happy man. Happy wife, happy life. That's what I say.
Her little human pet. Pet boy.
I gotta be with her.
You'd be with her. That's right. I'm happy for you guys.
Someone's talking in the theater. Go kill that person. I'm just going to shut up. Finally watch Oppenheimer in peace. You know what I mean? It's my dream. Ooh. All right, I think we're done.
I think we did it.
Counted as 90 minutes today, Aaron. See you guys. Thank you for being here.